Well, US President Donald Trump has denied responsibility for inciting a violent protest at the US Capitol, hitting out at Democrats as they move forward with a bid to impeach him for a second time. Speaking as he prepared to travel to Texas by helicopter, the president defended a speech encouraging his supporters to march on the Capitol.
So if you read my speech, and many people have done it, and I've seen it both in the papers and in the media, on television, it's been analysed, and people thought that what I said was totally appropriate.
Donald Trump also attacked Democrats and big tech companies as Congress prepares to vote on a resolution calling on Vice President Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment and remove him from office.
We want no violence, never violence. We want absolutely no violence. And on the impeachment, it's really a continuation of the greatest witch hunt in the history of politics. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. This impeachment is causing tremendous anger, and you're doing it, and it's really a terrible thing that they're doing.
That's the US President Donald Trump speaking earlier. Well, security is now being ramped up right across the United States as the FBI warns that pro-Trump supporters are organising armed protests in all 50 state capitals ahead of next week's inauguration of Joe Biden. David Kilcullen is a counterinsurgency and terrorism expert based in Colorado. David, welcome back to RN Breakfast.
Hey, Sally.
David, let's start with those comments from Donald Trump. Do you think that he was responsible for the violence at the Capitol last week? The president has defended his comments before the storming of Congress as totally appropriate.
Well, I think this is rather similar to the last time impeachment came up, where there was a big debate about the difference between political liability and legal responsibility. And in US law, there's a very specific definition of incitement, and I'm not 100% sure that what the president said on the 6th would meet that legal definition. So in that sense, he's sort of probably right. But in a broader sense, you know, he stood there for 2 hours, egged on a crowd of between 300 and 400,000 people to march on the Capitol. When they did get to the building, about 1,000 of them, so a small minority, but still a significant number of people, went ahead and broke into the building. So I do think that, at least in a moral or a political sense, he is responsible for what happened.
So some constitutional experts too, David, have been focusing on that definition, and they believe that it would be better to go after Donald Trump in a broader sense, if that line in a legal sense of inciting insurrection hasn't been crossed.
Yeah, well, I'm no constitutional lawyer, but as I understand it, you don't have to have committed a legal offence for Congress to impeach the president. They can impeach him for any reason, and it can be political. The question, though, is whether that would then result in any kind of meaningful chance of a conviction in the Senate, where he would, you know, need to get a 2/3 vote against him. So I think it's highly unlikely that it'll go through to a conviction. And of course, if it doesn't go through to a conviction, it's merely a political grandstanding effort on the part of Democrats, I think.
David, Donald Trump has said today that we want no violence. So given that he continues to encourage the idea that last year's election was fraudulent, in his words, stolen, will that message get through to his most fervent supporters, do you think?
It's very interesting now, looking at what people are saying to each other online after the 6th of the storming of the Capitol on the 6th. A lot of people on the very far right feel betrayed by President Trump and have actually turned against him. There's still a significant group that thinks that he's got some magical plan to pull things out of the fire at the very last minute. But I think that the majority of people, and the, you know, 74 million people voted for Donald Trump, were pretty unhappy with what they saw on the 6th and see any chance of kind of a future armed protest around the inauguration as just a really bad idea. So I think if people do come out, it's going to be a small fringe group and probably not necessarily pro-Trump people, but more what we would call accelerationists, people that want to accelerate the conflict for their own political ends.
What about this wild card that we were talking about before, these people who may have identified themselves previously as Trump supporters but been on the extremes and then were very angry, as you say, with what he said after the invasion of the Capitol last week? How do security officials handle those people who were with President Trump and are now not only angry at some aspects of American society itself but also at Donald Trump himself as well?
Yeah, so he essentially disappeared for about 3.5 hours during the storming of the Capitol, and I know you had a recording of his conversation earlier. What he actually said in this speech was, "Let's march to the Capitol. I'll be with you." He didn't go with them. He went back to the White House, so he left them stranded on one reading of the situation, and then he didn't say anything to support what they were doing, which they thought they were doing in his name. And then he came out and gave what many on the very far right saw as a kind of craven, cowardly speech. There was even a discussion at the time about whether it might be a deep fake video that somebody had created, because Trump couldn't possibly be backing down from what he'd said on the Mall. And of course, he absolutely was backing down from that. And a lot of people have since, a group of people on the extreme have since seen that as a good reason to dump him. I think that group's actually a lot easier to deal with, frankly, than the large body of people who are still unconvinced by the election result, because those people are now more or less committed to a violent series of actions in the United States, so they can be dealt with using normal law enforcement means. The rest of the 74 million, people, that's a very large number of well-meaning Americans who've been misled or not, depending on your point of view on the election. And if you think there's a need for reconciliation, that's going to require a political solution, not a law enforcement one.
The Washington Post is reporting that an FBI situation report before the riots warned that some protesters were actively calling for violence and even war online. Why was there such a failure to anticipate and prevent the violence that took place?
Well, there's a number of reasons, I think. One of them, I'm sure you've talked about, is that law enforcement have been confronted by, I think it's 500 or so declared riots in the last 12 months across 200 US cities, and multiple attacks on them and burning of buildings and so on. And that's all come from the left. And meanwhile, they've seen people on the right talking about backing the blue and supporting law enforcement. And I think there was just an instinctive reluctance to believe that people on the right could be violent and could attack the police when they've been saying sort of pro-police things for the last 10 months. I also think that people do tend to discount a lot of what's been said on social media, because a lot of Trump or pro-Trump events since the election that were talked up pretty hard in the media fizzled or never took place. And I think that's a bit of a misinterpretation. People sort of decided that the pro-Trump right was a spent force. Actually, what was happening, and you could see this if you looked at their conversations on social media, was they were waiting for this kind of magical solution, variously called the Kraken or the plan, where Trump was going to pull out some last minute, 12th dimensional jiu-jitsu move. And of course, that didn't happen. And so this time it was different, because a lot of people that were previously keeping their powder dry and waiting for that solution decided, yeah, that's not going to happen. So they joined the march. So I think it was a misreading of where people were at.
What do you think about the current situation, David? We're getting these warnings of protests across the country. Many people are heavily armed. What do you think the next few days will hold in the lead up to inauguration?
So this particular thing has been circulating since mid-December. And it's unattributed. It's not claimed by any particular group. So unlike the 6th of January, which was promoted very heavily by President Trump and his campaign, this is anonymous. People on the right now are saying that the event in DC is cancelled, and are saying it's a trap, don't go. It's an attempt to provoke the right and then lead to a mass disarmament of people on the right. So that's the event in DC in particular that people are now saying is cancelled. But the plan was to target every other state capital in all 50 states. And that still seems to be on. And, of course, it's worth mentioning that there's now 15,000 troops on the streets, heavily armed troops on the streets of Washington, as well as police from four different states. So let's say Washington's a much harder target, you know, next week than it was last week. But the flip side of that is if those police are in Washington or those troops are in Washington, they're not in their home states, and that leaves some other locations more vulnerable.
What's the backdrop to some of this? We saw huge sales of ammunition and weapons in the months leading up to the election. Are they people who are fearful of violence or people who are wanting to take part in violence?
I think primarily the former. It's people who are afraid and are taking steps to protect themselves. And in fact, one of the biggest surges of population groups that was buying weapons and ammunition were people on the political left who traditionally are not as well armed as people on the right, but they themselves were also arming up last year. And it's tempting to see fear as a less dangerous motive than hate. But actually, as we know from, you know, terrorism studies, and I know you've written on this extensively, fear is actually one of the major drivers of violence. When people feel afraid and they feel that someone else is coming to target them and they no longer trust the government, that's when they take up weapons, and their fear allows them to justify really extreme action. So I think the fact that it's a fear-driven response should actually give us more concern rather than less.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's kind of counterintuitive in a way. What do you think is the biggest misconception at the moment about what's happening, David?
I think that the biggest misconception, and one that I think is likely to create problems down the line, is that the rioters who violently attacked the Capitol are equivalent to people who support Donald Trump, and that those people are equivalent to, you know, right-wing or white supremacist people. We're talking here about a subset of a subset of a subset. And much as it was really important last year to make a clear distinction between people trying to burn courthouses down or shooting people in the streets versus peaceful protesters talking about how Black Lives Matter, I think there's going to be a need to make a similar, really clear distinction between peaceful protesters, rioters, and then militant criminal groups or militant terrorist groups. And as we know from experience overseas, if you don't make that distinction properly, you can generate a massive backlash from people who feel themselves to be unfairly targeted. And I think big tech, and in particular the massive, I think we're up to now 70,000 Twitter accounts being banned in the United States in the last 3 days, that's starting this narrative that, you know, they're out to get you, and it's a pogrom or a genocidal attack on people on the right. And I think that's a pretty dangerous misconception.
But you know, the flip side of that is having all this misinformation out there and all this fuel as well. So how do you get it right?
Well, I mean, it's absolutely crazy, right? It's almost like a non-overlapping Venn diagram where people on one side of politics are living in one reality and people on the other are living in a completely different set of facts. And there isn't even a basic agreement on what reality is, and that makes it very hard to have any kind of compromise or to reduce the temperature. I think, you know, I'm not a supporter of Senator Ted Cruz's idea of doing a commission to recertify the results. I mean, A, that's not going to happen in time, and B, I think it was a politically motivated suggestion anyway. But at some point, there might need to be some kind of a truth and reconciliation process where some impartial or bipartisan body gets the job of actually sorting through what really happened. And that may seem, you know, not very sensible given that people are now packing weapons around the Capitol.
But there have been 60 court cases, though, that have already given us those answers, haven't they?
Well, they haven't. That's the problem, right? So the people on the right will say the Supreme Court case was thrown out on the basis of standing, that the actual claims were never tested, and the other 48 cases or so didn't actually address the underlying facts of the allegations of fraud. Now, that's not quite true. A couple of them did, but actually the majority of them threw things out because the fraud was not deemed to be sufficient to change the election result, or because there wouldn't be time to come up with an answer or whatever. But I also think we should make a distinction again between legally deciding what is true and what isn't, which is the job of a court, versus the process of national, you know, coming to terms with reality that would be the role of some kind of truth and reconciliation process.
David Kilcullen, counterinsurgency and terrorism expert based in Colorado. Time is against us, as it always is. Thank you very much for joining us on RN Breakfast.
Thanks for having me, Sally.